Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 3 of the Barking Boys podcast. Today, joined with me is Steven and Hardhat. And as if you had missed it, last episode we had talked about some issues involving a dolphin, as well as some other interesting ideas and unsolved mysteries. So go ahead and check out last episode if you haven't already. But thank you for joining us today. And we have some very spicy topics for you guys. So I hope you enjoy.
Issues with our dolphin.
Yeah,
they were busy fucking it.
No, they were busy fucking it. Oh, no, someone's gonna have to cut that out. No. We're a minute in.
Oh, no, dude, it's been like 10 seconds. So, I present to you folks today the case of the Mary Celeste. That was a boat, a ship, in fact. Launched in 1861, that's when they like made it and put it out to sea for the first time under the name the Amazon. Somebody with poor driving skills, I guess, ran it aground 6 years later. Jesus. And then they're like, you know what, we'll just give this to the Americans because it was originally Canadian, right?
For sure.
So that's when it got renamed to the Mary Celeste. Just a fine ship, you know, had the sails made of wood, just like
pirate ship.
You know, when you imagine a boat. That's probably pretty accurate to what it is.
Yeah, no guns, so, no nothing. It was just a boat.
It was a cargo vessel.
Yeah.
Sorry. So to introduce a guy named Benjamin Briggs, born in 1835, son of a captain, was a Christian man who went on to marry his cousin Sarah. I mean, back
of course.
In the day, that's pretty like.
Of course, that's know, it. Is one does.
And he had two kids, Arthur and Sophia. By the time of our story, Briggs achieved renown and high standing, and he's a captain, obviously. And so what happened was he made some money, and he was looking for investment opportunities. So he used some of the money he made as a captain to buy the Mary Celeste, right? And at that point, I imagine you have to be like pretty ballin', just to like buy a boat even back then. So,
motherfucker was, you know, just slinging it, dude.
Oh yeah, homie's just he knows what he's doing, man. He's doing it right.
So the trip in question that we're talking about today, starting in November of 1872 from the port of New York, they're heading to Genoa, Italy, right?
Sure.
To take them from the east coast of the United States across the Atlantic through the Strait of Gibraltar, finally reaching Italy. Well, it'd take probably 20, 30 days. I don't know how long. It could have been like years. You could tell me anything and I'd probably believe it. But from what I understand, it's like it wasn't going to be that long, like a month at most. And their cargo was 1,701 barrels of alcohol. Notably, this was not methanol. Was ethanol, which means if you drank this, you would just die. You wouldn't get drunk, right? Like, no fun, nothing to be done.
What a party.
Yeah, absolutely killer. So,
God.
Since it was, a trip across the ocean, Briggs was careful and considerate when choosing his crew, especially because his wife, Sarah, and newborn daughter, Sophia, were going with him, right?
Right.
So the second mate was a guy named Andrew Gilling, 25. There was a steward. His name was William Henn. I guess steward. I don't know how you say it. Whatever. I don't even know what these people did.
Like, I don't know what they did. I'll say that's right. I don't know. Right? Right.
And then four like German crewmen. Everybody had a good reputation. Sarah even wrote down in her diary that they appeared to be quietly capable if they continue as they had begun. So... Another ship that's relevant to our story is the De Gratia. So while the Mary Celeste and crew were departing from New York, this ship was in New Jersey, just a bit south. I think that's south. Preparing to go to the same destination, Genoa, Italy, in this case carrying petroleum, right?
Cool.
So the guy in charge of that ship was named Captain David Morehouse. He had a first mate. Same story. Everybody was like pretty well respected. I mean, at that day and age, I don't really know if like you just like got respect for being a captain. Is it like being an airliner in the '80s?
Just that cool. Just,
you know,
that guy.
You are the
like,
one.
Walk around. You got neat cuffs and a cool hat. Like nobody's gonna stop you. Anyways, they departed to go to the same route, 8 days after the Mary Celeste, right?
Sure.
So 19 days later, on December 4th, 1872, the De Gratia found just like the Mary Celeste being all weird on the ocean. Like, it had an odd set of sails hanging. It wasn't like going in a straight line or anything. And so they're like, we better check this out. They changed course. They went over there. And when they got to the ship, they found that, like, there was nobody there.
Like, nobody on the ship?
Nobody on the Mary Celeste.
Okay. Oh, my.
not a soul. And this is weird because they were like, I don't know how to describe how big the ocean is, but, like, they were not near land at the time. They were probably most of the way across the Atlantic when whatever happened happened. But whatever happened, they were gone. Some sails were missing. Some of the rigging was damaged, which, you know, when you're on a long ocean journey, you want to try to keep that shit as nice as possible for as long as possible, right? Because you can't just, like,
sure.
No more. The main hatch was secure. Other hatches were open. And a single lifeboat was missing. Another weird thing, a notably, like, a notoriously very heavy, like, compass-type device had been, like, knocked around. The glass was shattered on it. So signs something a little weird might have happened.
Oh, God.
They found the daily log. The last mention was November the 24th, 10 days earlier. And this log recorded nothing out of the ordinary. So the inside of the ship was fine. It wasn't, like, destroyed or anything. Some things were, like, missing. Other things were out where they should be. There wasn't a fire. There was no signs of, like, a fight that took place or anything like that. And there were no signs of the crew.
The fuckers just dipped.
Up and left.
They were like, fuck it, we're out. But they can't fit an entire crew on a single...
vessel?
Lifeboat.
I'm not sure. I think they might have been able to. I don't know how big those lifeboats were.
Still,
I don't know. Without knowing how big a lifeboat was, like, I couldn't attest. But it was just like, I imagine you're a pretty bog standard thing. So that would have been 1, 2, 3, 4, 8 people and a baby on a lifeboat. I feel like you could do it in a pinch. If it's just like your bog standard,
Jesus.
What I'm imagining. Like, they're bigger than the Sea of Thieves ones or whatever. So anyways, the De Gratia, the ship that found it, split their crew in half. They also had 8 people. So it was 4 and 4, and very painfully got both ships to Gibraltar, which, if you don't know what that is, that's where Spain and Africa meet at that little tip that you passed through.
The Strait of Gibraltar, whatever. Yeah.
Yep. And that's how you get access to the Mediterranean Sea and all that, right? So they get to Gibraltar, and there were salvage hearings, which is where if you needed to, like, get insurance payments or whatever, they'll be like, something bad happened, I lost all my cargo, give me some money back, I guess. Like,
okay.
The same way if you total your car or something.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
But the hearings were conducted by a man named Frederick Solly Flood. Flood was an attorney general of Gibraltar. And he was later described by a historian as a man whose arrogance and pomposity were inversely proportional to his IQ. Just
thing, what right? The like, fuck? That is a
that's awesome.
You are burned. Like, what are you gonna do?
Have you come
dumber,
back from that?
He's dumber than shit at that point. What the fuck?
Into the roast of people alive, man.
He just, like, couldn't write dumber than shit. It's, right, like, it'd be a little more eloquent with his word choice. But so this idiot Flood, he was just, like, convinced that the crew had gotten drunk on the alcohol, which, once again, not the right kind of alcohol for that. Killed the captain, wife,
what?
Daughter, first mates, officer, and then ran away.
Oh,
without
my...
the alcohol.
Okay, what the fuck?
With a boat. Like, they killed the captain and all that? This is his theory, right? and then just like dipped in the middle of the ocean on a life raft. Like,
listen,
they were just so drunk. They were idiots. They were dummies, and they did those terrible things. And that really sucks, but that's what Flood was like. Sure, they did.
Listen, I've been drunk before in my life, and I know us two, y'all other two, have been drunk before in our lives. But never,
I would never.
Have I ever gotten the inebriation to the point where, like, yeah, I want to kill somebody. Like, yeah, that...
I don't want to fucking go to sleep.
I mean, yeah, like, sometimes you get drunk and you're like, yeah, let's overthrow the government, let's go! But, never have I been like, yeah, let's just kill everybody and just, you know, dip.
So we're through the government.
I mean, I would like to mention, like, they were in a boat, though. And I don't know about
I guess it'd be...
I bet that's one heck of a drunk, just knowing that, like...
You're just stuck out in the middle.
You got absolutely tossed. If you have, like, a hangover too bad and just, like, don't get the shit right, you could just, like, kill everybody. You know?
That'd be...
Good.
That'd be pretty
good. God.
Cool.
Nah, I mean, they probably got drunk all the time. That's kind of how life was back then, right?
Like, oh, fair. Yeah, that was just another part of life. That's like an average Tuesday.
This is literally me, IRL.
You
So, Flood did some idiotic things during this trial that I won't mention right now, but just know that, like, he made a lot of dumb decisions. His theories made no fucking sense in or out of context. And everybody just kind of, like, eventually got around to the fact that this guy was full of shit. And so they're like, well, the Mary Celeste, we'll release it, right? So the ship was released. They gave it to a different crew, or somebody bought it or something.
Right.
It finished its journey with the alcohol, and the salvage payment was paid to, I guess, the owner of the cargo or whatever. And notably, the payment was a lot less because this Flood guy was like, it was foul play. It was foul play. And so they're like, well, it might have been. And so, you know, they screwed over the other dude. Well, that's all fine and dandy, but we still got the question, what actually happened to those folks, right?
Yeah.
And this kind of comes into, like, my fear. Thalassophobia is the fear of the ocean, right? And I fear that, like, there are a bunch of things that we don't understand that aren't common enough to be, like, recorded well, especially back then. And, like, they'll just kill you. They'll kill you. They'll kill your family. They'll kill anybody else who's on the boat with
literally,
you. And in this case, leaving the boat intact.
It goes into the fact that we just don't know enough about the ocean.
Yeah, we really don't. Oh my god! Yeah, I should have had something for ocean this week. That's what I missed out on.
Don't worry. I'll follow it up while you try to figure something out. But still, like, so you know, it's always talked about that we know more about, like, the universe, like space around us, than we know about the ocean down below us. You know, seems like it doesn't, a week or month doesn't go by where we're like, hey, you know, what the fuck is this creature that we just found? I mean, we didn't discover until, like, a couple of years ago, the giant squid that they compared to, like, the Kraken?
Yeah. Deep sea giganticism.
Yeah, well, I mean, okay, so deep sea giganticism can, like, affect any deep sea animal. Because, like, they've had, they think that the megalodon is just a great white shark that's suffering from...
Fair! Fucking fair, man! That's,
They also think it's a whale shark because people don't understand what a whale shark is, and we still don't fully understand, like, some of the habits of a whale shark because they go down so low. And so we can't track them fully. Like, we don't even know the breeding habits of a whale shark, but, like, they believe that, you know, older people had found a whale shark and was like, oh, that's the megalodon, when, you know, the whale shark is just a bottom feeder, essentially. It does nothing. It's literally huge, but it doesn't
does not eat. Have that dog in him.
Yeah, it doesn't have that dog in him. He don't eat anybody.
So hold up, what is deep sea giganticism?
It's it's whenever a creature is, like, extremely bigger than what it should be, And there's been small cases of like octopi and sharks suffering from gigantism where they're just way bigger than they should be. I know they've had cases of octopuses suffering from it, and they're like, oh, hey, that's the fucking Kraken. No, it's just a regular octopus.
It's just homie.
Yeah, and it's a very rare thing that happens with some, and I can't tell you why it happens, but just randomly whenever they're born, they're just bigger than all the other guys.
So I suppose, like, we have giganticism. Right?
Well, yeah.
Like Andre the Giant and all that.
Well, yeah, I guess
we... Although his was something else, too.
Yeah, that dude...
I don't know. I don't know the story.
Andre the Giant was built different, but yeah, he... I mean, have you ever just, like, thought to compare yourself versus, like, an NBA or an NFL football player on how bigger they are compared to us? And then, like...
You know, you hear the stats, right? But it's so hard to, like... put an image in your head of what those correlate to.
So just think of like us normal people compared to like an NFL or an NBA player would be compared to, you know, like a regular shark and then a shark suffering from giganticism. But it's like more proportional. Like they're way bigger than, you know, they should be. Like way bigger than they should be. I do also have a story about ships and their crew being lost. I learned about this one last week. It is called the Franklin's Lost Expedition. They were trying to find the what they call it, the Victoria Strait. Essentially, what they were trying to do is from Britain... they were trying to find a way to go to the Pacific Ocean around America. And so they thought that so they were going to sail through the top end of Canada, over the top end of Canada and into the Pacific Ocean. And so this expedition was to go and find a strait that would lead them through it so they could open up trade routes. It was... headed by a game named Captain John Franklin, him and his two ships, the Empress and the Terror, HMS Terror, which...
Oh, I love this story.
Like, if you get on a ship named Terror, what the fuck? But they...
Nah, dude, that's a hard name right there. That is the exact ship I would want to be
yeah,
on.
Yeah, like, what ship are you on? The Terror.
Yeah, like, what are you going to do, fight that?
Yeah, no, you ain't touching that. But so they were trying to find, it's called the Northwest Passage in the Canadian Arctic. So just think of like they had to traverse into the Canadian Arctic through ice, in which they knew they were going to have to deal with ice and stuff like that. They knew the ships were going to freeze and stuff. So these guys had food out the ass, water, animals, you name it, which in... I believe this was in 1848.
That's nuts.
So at the time, they...
That was not clean. Like...
yeah. But, so I'm going to give a little context on these ships and the storage of the food so I can go into later how all this ran out. So the ships at the time were steam driven as well as sailboats. So they had figured out that they could put a steam engine from a locomotive inside of these ships, and it would drive a propeller. It wouldn't make it very fast, but it would help them in like situations where there was no wind. So they would use this the steam engine, and also the steam engine had lead pipes throughout the entire ship. Lead being, y'all need to listen to the lead part. Lead pipes throughout the ship that would send steam throughout the boat to heat the ship, because they knew they were going to go into a colder climate, and so they had to figure out a way to like heat the ship and stuff to keep the crew alive. Also,
this is a neat ship.
Yeah, they were pretty like advanced for the time. They also had a mechanism that would close a door, and it would seal the propeller in, so the propeller wouldn't like drag on the sails. And, like, if any time they needed to turn the steam engine on, they would open this door on the rear end of the ship, and the propeller would come out.
What the fuck? That's awesome.
But, okay, so the food was canned, but it was lead soldered sealed. So it was like, basically, they took lead and melted it to seal the top end of these cans of this food. Which, you know, they didn't know anything about lead poisoning or anything about that at that time. Yep. They were just doing whatever they could. But they decided, they made it up towards Canada and into a territory called Nunavut. Nunavut. And they got stuck in ice. It ended up becoming winter. The waters froze, and so the ship got stuck, or both ships got stuck, and they were fine with that. They knew that was coming. They were gonna stay on the ship, wait out the winter, and whenever the summer would come around, the water would melt, and they would be able to continue on their way. And that's why they had all that food, is so they could just hang out on the ship, and they could use the steam engines to keep the boat warm during that time. But the thing is, the ship stayed icebound for over a year because of the path they took. Where they took the path, it never really melted a whole lot over there. And so they were icebound for almost a year. And finally, they decided, all right, we got to do something. We got to get off the fucking ship. We got people that are sick, that are suffering from some sicknesses. And the only thing they could do is they went to just, you know, to inland Canada, which was, you know, they had their own Indian tribes and whatnot that lived in that territory. Well, they sent I believe Britain sent another ship after them to go find him, because after like 2 years or 3 years, they hadn't heard from them at all. Like nothing, not a letter, not, hey, we've seen this ship going, nothing. So they sent in another ship. Let me see if I can see the name of it real quick. I don't know the second name of the ship, but that's fine. So they went up and went to look for it. Of course, they found a bunch of dead people on the two frozen ships. Actually, no, they didn't find the ships at all. Sorry, y'all are going to have to, like, cut that part out, because they didn't find the ships at all. They found some, like, on the land, they found, like, a gravesite and, like, a small campsite. But they also found bones of the people, but the bones had been broken in half and all the marrow was gone out of the bones. The bones also had teeth marks on them. It was discovered that the crew had just run out of fucking food and just resorted to cannibalism because they had
incredible real Donner party shit.
Jeffrey Donner before Jeffrey Donner just came out of nowhere so they could live, I guess. So they
were the descendants of Shawnee Bean.
Yeah, Shaunty Bean. Yeah, that one we talked Shaunty about in the Bean, first episode. Yeah. But so you know, they couldn't really discover why they left the ships or what happened to them or anything like that. They never really found the crew other than the fact that they're like, hey, they ate each other. They got in with the Inuits, which were the Indians that lived up towards, you know, in Canada, and they were like, yeah, we met them. They journeyed inwards towards, you know, the closer into Canada. But so they never really could figure anything out of why this crew left the ships, what happened to them, and stuff like that. It wasn't until 2013, I believe, that they found the ship. Let me get down to this. Is that what I want? 2016. They found both the HMS Terror and they first found
that you were having no luck at that other ship name. That's unfortunate.
Ebrus? Yeah, it was the Ebrus. Yeah, the Ebrus. I'm having a hard time talking. Let's be honest. But on September 12th, 2016, they finally found the ship. And there was a bunch of coordinates and whatnot, and I'm not giving that all to you, but it was 79 feet below the water in pristine condition. Both ships were in pristine condition. There wasn't anything wrong with them. No holes, no nothing. They just, they weathered down and finally they sank underneath the water, I guess from all the ice and stuff. But,
sure.
They were able to bring the ships up, I believe, or did they leave them down below? Nope, they left them down below. Remotely operated water vehicle. Yep, they sent a little submarine down to go look at it. But yeah, there's like theories that they suffered from lead poisoning from either the pipes inside the ship.
The fucking lead in the water.
Yeah, don't let
lead on the food.
Turn the freaking frogs gay!
Does. Fluoride does.
That's
a fun fact, yeah.
Turns the freaking frogs gay. But,
interesting.
Hermaphroditic.
But what was crazy was the second... They sent another exploration out after that. And they went through the Simpson Strait, which was just a little bit lower than the other strait they went through. And they went through just fine.
They chose left instead of right.
They literally went the wrong way, and the wrong way just made, you know...
It killed them. It ruined their...
It literally did, because whenever they went through the other straits, yeah, the boats froze again, but they unfroze. They discovered that they just went too far north. Or, yeah. Just went too high towards the sun and, you know, melted the wings off. But, yeah, that's the kind of summarization.
I think this
is
the opposite of the melting of the wings, though, I think.
It was more of the freezing of them.
Yeah, no, that sucks. That's a horrible way to die.
Yeah, they all pretty much either starved to death or ate each other. Or you
imagine?
Know.
Well, I did, and then died later.
Yeah, then died later from, you know.
So, like,
Jesus.
What I guess I'm trying to understand is how... I don't. You seem like I don't know. It's once again my ignorance shining through. But they seemed so prepared. Like
they were.
What more could they have done? They were just doomed.
Yeah. Well, literally, all it went down to is navigation fault. Is they went down the wrong strait pretty much, and it froze them over, and they couldn't last. I mean, they could last a winter, but it just got to the point where they finally got off the boats because the boats weren't going nowhere. So they were like, fuck it, we got to do something. And they got off, and they left some crew on you know, each ship, because I believe some of them were sick or hurt, or they just weren't strong enough to go in an exploration.
That's rough.
Yeah.
They called those guys dinner.
God,
oh, my goodness.
Fantastic.
Well, I guess I don't envy those people. That's just not a
no,
good way
it's,
to go.
That's absolutely terrible.
I can't imagine what the stomach drop was like when the confidence ran out, right? They're like, we got this. We can withstand any period
we can do
of time.
This.
And that just simply wasn't the case, right? Like,
that's just so
fucking
terrible. One
day somebody had to take a look at the rations and think, we've been here for too long.
You guys were
fucked. We
don't even
have enough to get back if we were to get out tomorrow.
Yeah,
like,
we need to fucking leave. And they're like, all right, let me just eat my friend.
Shit, fucking God.
I just, man.
One for the road, you know.
One for the road. You gotta bring your snackies.
You gotta bring your snackies with you, except they're your
someone
to
go on
close friends.
You get all your
snackies. Speaking of, no, I'm just kidding. I don't have a translation for that. I have speaking of snackies, there's a topic that I came about that I think is very interesting from that I've heard about from a while, but I wanted to talk about it out here. This, and I'm not sure if you guys have heard of it or not, is the unsettling legend of the crying boy paintings curse.
Oh, fuck, I've heard of these.
Oh,
no, these paintings are fucking...
Oh, man, that kid is just a sad kid.
He is a sad man.
He's a crying kid.
So it all started by this dude made this painting. His name was Giovanni Bregolin. He was an Italian painter. but they originally credited it to him. But the true artist was originally that guy was non-existent. The true artist was Bruno Amido. He was actually from Spain. However, he painted these paintings, and over 60 of them from the 50s to the 80s. They were painted and reprinted and distributed and all that stuff, you know, brought all over the place. It became very popular later on during the years, and over 50,000 copies were sold in only the UK alone. And that only gives a scale for what it would be in the rest of the world as well. However, when it comes to the... people just... Maybe they like the painting. Maybe it's just sensationalism type stuff.
You got too much time on your
hands. Abstract art, my man.
But, so the interesting thing about that is they reported about what, how the painting came to be. One of the paintings specifically that he painted was about a little street, a little street urchin is what they called it. He's basically an orphan kid. he was a mute, with a sorrowful expression that captivated the artist. And when he painted him, a Catholic priest went over to warn him. And he said that the boy, his name was Don Bolino, he had run away after seeing his parents die in a fire. But since then, fires of unknown origin would break out wherever the kid would go. It happened so frequently that he was given the nickname Diablo, which is insane to me. And of course, the priest kept warning him, blah, blah, blah. And it cursed, you know, fucking homie ignored him. He also adopted the kid as well as painting him. and he went home and he lived with the kid and got the painting of the crying boy series all set up. And here, let me show you the original picture. If you need a reference, there's that.
Yeah, you don't have to send it twice. I saw it the first time.
Oh, okay. That's fine.
Fucking anyway. Hell. No, God.
Okay. Sorry. Anyway.
Look at it again. It's going to catch my house on fire.
So. There's a few interesting things that happened after this painting was widely distributed. The original artist, Amadio, his studio and apartment caught fire.
That's a fluke so far.
That's so far not great living.
Yeah.
Crying man one.
It happens.
It's described as a mysteriously caught on fire and he lost everything and he was ruined after the fact. He said he remembers the priest's warnings and accused the boy of starting the fire. He kicked him out, and he never saw him again.
He just kicked this child out. I was like, fuck it, you caught my...
Yeah, you caused this fire, get the fuck out of my house, right?
Well,
not a great... Yeah, homie... Well, okay, now he's still an orphan. I mean, that didn't change.
God,
dude, take him in and unkill his parents.
But it got way worse for him.
Boy,
after he kicked
Batman.
The kid out, after he got he kicked out the orphan, the curse of the crying boy painting started to spread all over Europe, according to witness accounts and a whole bunch of other stuff. And his fame turned into suspicion, and he became known as a jinx, that he might have done this on purpose and tried to fuck people over. And no one wanted to look at any of his paintings and let alone commission him to paint. And he was ruined because of this. After his huge success, people were like, hey, your paintings are fucked and cursed. What the fuck, man? And so nobody bought his stuff anymore. Also, Don Bonolio, the artist dude, he died in a fire in 1976. He crashed his car.
Don Bonolio is the boy, right? The kid.
Yes, I think I was wrong. Yes, that's right. I'm sorry. Yes, Don Bonella is the kid.
The painter is Bruno Amarillo.
Yes, yeah. Sorry. Yes, the kid eventually, the orphan, died in a fire. His car exploded after he hit a wall.
Oh, fuck
They found...
he didn't die in a fire. He killed himself by running
into a
wall.
Dude just pulled out the Dale Earnhardt. Rest in peace, Dale Earnhardt.
Jesus Christ.
That's the worst thing that happened in 2001.
Right, literally. Wasn't anything worse than that.
So they eventually... cops came out of the scene. They found out that the body was burned beyond recognition. And the kid was the only one in the car at that time. And they searched the glove box, and they found part of the driver's license, and that was his name that was on it. And for many, the fiery matter of his death served to aid validity to the crying boy curse. The first house that was reported having fire occurrences around it because of the crying boy painting was in Rotherham in 1985. by somebody named Ron and Mary, right? The fire destroyed everything on the first floor of their, excuse me, for their home, except for one item. And the only item that survived was the painting of the crying boy that hanged in their living room wall. Apparently, during the fire, the painting fell from the wall, landed down, and strangely was only slightly charred. And though the cause of the fire was found to be a chip pan, which is deep frying stuff, that overheated and burst into flames and, you know, caused the fire, the couple was convinced that the painting was cursed and that it, and not the pan, was the reason that the fire happened.
Makes sense. The painting caught the house on fire.
Yeah, no, so they were like, hey, no, it's not the painting, it's just the chip pan. Well, yeah, but the fucking dumbasses, but like, in my opinion, I think that it's the chip pan, right? Or fucking, whatever.
No, neglect by the people, and they were like, oh, no, it's the painting.
Yeah, it's fucking, I don't know, whatever. But they, you know, they weren't alone. There were more, experiences along with that. Fire services started to investigate certain points involving these paintings, logging over 50 fires where the crying boy painting survived. They said it was things like the discarded cigarettes, chip pans, like last time, faulty wiring, and leading them to believe that the results were from human carelessness rather than a supernatural curse. However, there were 50 fires logged with the crying boy paintings in them.
Wait, 50? Which is...
There were 50 different cases logged with fires where the crying boy painting survived.
You're telling me this painting survived 50 fucking fires?
Yes, it's the most conveniently...
Okay, so it's not... There's not just, like, one framed painting. There's a bunch of reproductions.
Yes. There's a bunch of new paintings. I'm sorry. That's
definitively fucking cursed. If it's been around since, like, 1950 or whatever...
Oh yeah,
it just sets one new house on fire wherever it is every year.
Oh yeah,
like we would probably get it down to the hour if we like paid close enough attention.
Oh Jesus! So the thing that was terrifying was that it was also reprints and remakes. Sometimes it wasn't even the same artist. Sometimes it wasn't even the same boy or the same kids. Right. Regardless, if it was in this image of the crying boy, or like you know, with the same intention, I assume that everything started to get fucked over the years. And then, this person didn't believe, you know, this person fucking Wilkinson, I think his name was? Oh, he was a fire station officer. Yes, he was the one who was reporting that, saying, these people are just fucking idiots, right? There's no way that these, paintings are doing this. He was a skeptic. He didn't believe in any of that shit. Right. He didn't believe in the curse. But when he was presented with a framed print of the crying boy upon when he retired, he declined the gift. And that freaked everyone out and led him to to issue a statement and meant to debunk the curse. Because at first people were like, oh, what the fuck? He doesn't want to take it down because he knows his shit's going to get burned up, right? But he says the reason why the painting has not been destroyed in the fire is because it's printed on high-density hardboard, which is difficult to ignite, is how he put it. But he also didn't mention that the paintings were of different children and even from different artists, which is also fucking weird. And so they still wouldn't burn. A bit interesting, right? There were further fires, injuries, and deaths, including supernatural occurrences and things like that, where some people reported that they saw the painting swaying from side to side on the wall, or that it returns to its place after being destroyed.
What the fuck?
Yeah, fucking not the
Wait,
fucking
so
move.
Wait, so they destroyed it, and it was like, nah.
So they, back, yes, they just... Some would try to destroy it, and then it would just be back.
Oh, okay.
Not cool.
I would definitely do that to fuck with somebody.
Just get a copy.
Buy another one. Yes.
Yeah, if somebody had a book they thought was like haunted or whatever, it's like an old post somewhere. but it's like they have a book they don't like, and so they threw it, you know, in a lake or whatever, and so the husband or whatever got a second copy of that same book, like put it under the sink and then tossed it in her nightstand.
What the fuck?
Like, he ran water on it and tossed it in her nightstand to fuck with her. And I thought that was really funny.
That's hilarious. I dig that. So along with these occurrences and the deaths, panic started to go all over the place, right? there was eventually I believe it was a news outlet, if I remember right. called The Sun was started to get on the sensationalism. people started to look to this art, this news outlet for answers of the crying painting and to like help them and stuff like that. And the Sun's the Sun's editor announced, "Enough is enough. If you're worried about a crying boy painting hanging in your home, send it to us immediately. We'll destroy it for you." And that should see the back of any curse. Saying that, you know, fucking, we're going to go together and we're going to make a bonfire. We're going to burn all the paintings, right? So there's no more curse.
Okay, what makes sense? People just like, no fucking shit. He's in the place that everybody burns. That's the first thing anybody turns to. They're like, oh, man. Don't just toss it in the fucking dumpster.
Bring it to me. I will catch it on fire.
I'm gonna go light it on fire. It's like the dude's parents died, and he was a mute. That's why, like, at least in the original, allegedly.
Sure.
His parents died, the little street urchin, and he was sad, and he couldn't talk anymore after, right? Like, he just, sure. I don't know. You know, one of those mental things, those trauma gaps, right? And so everybody's like, you know what we need to do? Expose the image of this poor bastard to more fire. Like, that's gonna help anything.
Yeah, no, catch him on more fire. No, more!
It doesn't make sense to me, but it's what they ended up doing.
Dude, man, I really think that no one had common sense before, like, 2013, maybe.
No shot.
I don't know. There's still people that vote for... Never mind. Whoops. Ooh. Can't say that one.
Sorry. Okay.
No, that election was in... No, I'm not.
It was in 2016. Aha!
Good lord. All right. However, okay. People brought over 2,500 copies of this print, of the prints in total, to this huge bonfire around Halloween. they decided to burn them at a mass bonfire near River Thames, I think.
The River Thames. One that goes through London.
Yeah.
It's like a river.
It was a highly publicized event on Halloween, and the paintings were burned under the supervision of the fire brigade. They also called it Crying Flame in headlines, which is, you know, a little bit fucked in my opinion. And somebody said, oh yeah, everything's... The police officer... I said, I think that where many people can breathe a little easier now, because they're like, oh yeah, we burned the painting, we did so good, look at us, pat on the back. However, after these paintings, two men started to run tests on some of the other paintings of the crying boys.
Like the OG, or just like a handful?
Just copies, just ones that they would find.
The picture in this one, it looks like they're all the same. Like,
oh yeah, I think it was the main one that they referenced. Yeah, there is one. There is one that's different than the other ones in one of the videos. I think it's the second article. However, after this fire, the people, you know, were still talking about the curse. there were two people that got together. They purchased a crying boy picture that was inexplicably delayed on his destination several times. Oh, and then after they purchased, after they purchased it, he, his name is Punt Pi, P-U-N-T-P-I. Yeah, it's something. He was delayed on his destinations after getting the painting, and he attempted to burn the painting with construction researcher Martin Shipp. And the two men found that beyond the string, the artwork didn't really burn. Punt and Shipp surmised that a fire retardant varnish was used, but the test was also explained how the string holding the painting on the wall would burn and cause it to fall face down on the floor. And another investigation suggested that Amadio's use of a compressed board could also explain why it's difficult to burn. So there were,
So it wasn't even that the painting itself was just, like, cursed. It was just the fact that, you know, how he made the painting, it was just harder to burn than anything else.
Yeah, it was overly sensationalized. But there were also people saying that they were swinging around and that they, you know, of course...
Yeah, but that's pretty easy to claim, right?
Yeah.
So, hear me out. That poor fucker lost his whole livelihood as an artist just because of, like... misattribution to the cause of a fucking fire.
Well, he also blamed an orphan for stuff.
Well, okay, so wherever the orphan went, fires went. So maybe that orphan was starting fires. Like,
Like, maybe he's just, like, getting back
at... He's just pissed that his parents died in a fire, so he's like, fuck it, everybody's gonna die too in a fire.
Yeah, or just he just really didn't like property or whatever, right? You know, being homeless or whatever. But this sounds just a significant amount, like a bunch of people just going nuts over some fucking random shit, and it's just like, oh my god, it didn't burn. Oh. And the dude's like, yeah, I used like fireproof paper.
Yeah, literally, I just made it better than what everything else. Shit.
It's just yeah. built different. Oh,
it's literally built different.
It's like when the jaguars eat your face.
Like, they're just built different.
No fucking shit.
They got that dog in them, even though they're cats.
Got that dog in them.
All right, hey.
No, I don't have a whole lot of hope for that one being too real.
Yeah, I think that's.
I don't either. I think it's an interesting legend, but I don't think it's real.
I think people just like really
they lost their
really
shit.
Got into the fucking.
They're like, all right, just milk this shit.
Oh yeah. The sun
this
was a
this
cunt
would be
as
the
well.
Same time of like the D&D panic and everything else.
Oh yeah, the
oh
fucking
god,
satanic
yeah.
panic.
Satanic yeah, panic. The satanic panic.
Okay, so I have one more story, a quick one, kind of if okay. if y'all will.
I'm ready. Let's.
All right, I'm bringing us back to the ocean.
I'll bet.
But this one, it's not superstitious. It's just extremely bad luck. Okay, just the worst luck known to man. Okay, and of course, being me, I have to bring it back to World War II. Okay, picture this. It's June 9th, 1944. No, that's just whenever this picture was taken. Thank you, giant fucking dickbag. Anyway,
June 6th is no, the...
June 6th the D-Day. Was D-Day. Yeah, okay, so...
It was supposed to be on my birthday, but they had to delay the day. I'm so pissed.
Yeah, they did. They did. It had too many clouds over the head, and they couldn't come in. Weather was not proper. Okay, November 12th, 1943. Okay, we got a destroyer by the name of USS William D. Porter. Or also, well, its first nickname was the Willie D. It was they were going to use it as an escort ship. And by the way, at this time, this crew that was on this ship were all new. They had never seen combat. They hadn't done anything like that yet. Okay, so what did they do? Well, in 1943, on this date, Franklin Delano Roosevelt decided that, well, they were going to go over and have the Tehran conferences with Stalin and, oh shit, the one from Britain.
Churchill.
Yeah, so this is the big Tehran conference. So, FDR had to go across the Atlantic Ocean, and, well, they had a real big problem with German U-boats at the time, so they had a massive fleet that went across this, and this little boat was going to be one of the outer protections for the president being on a giant battleship, the USS Iowa. And President Roosevelt, while they were going through their trip, he was like, hey, can y'all, like, just show me how cool your guns are and stuff? And they're like, yeah, sure, watch this, Mr. President. And so they sent up some balloons in the air, and they shot them down with their anti-aircraft guns, you know. But the William D. Porter was more torpedo heavy. So, you know, they wanted to practice their torpedoes. So they decided that, of course, the ship that they were going to practice fire on was the USS Iowa. They weren't going to actually fire their torpedoes. They were just going to dry fire, essentially. They weren't supposed to have anything loaded. They were just going to, you know, pretend fire. So of course they were doing, you know, whatever they do, they're making moves and whatnot. And I want you to know at this time it was radio.
He was making moves.
It was radio silence. They could not say anything over the radio because they didn't want the Germans to figure out that they had the president of the United States on a fucking battleship going across the Atlantic Ocean.
Sure.
So they couldn't speak at all. So the Willie D lines up and it does its first test fire on the USS Iowa, and it's like, oh yeah, fire, we hit him. So they do it again. They're like, oh, line up, fire, we hit him. And they go for the third one. Well, they didn't know they had loaded their torpedo, I guess, in tube 3.
And they're like, they
do they check the first two and thought, ah, we're,
yeah,
fine.
We're good. Yeah, no, they lined up, they hit the button, torpedo three, and they launched a torpedo at the USS Iowa holding the President of the United States. So they, you know, you ever seen this, those?
That's some alternate history, like the Nazis win the war.
Yeah.
Like, that's the turning point right there. Is like,
well, I mean, FDR died in the middle of the war. That's why we nuked Japan. But,
what was Truman going to do? He didn't know what the fuck was going on. We didn't nuke Japan because fucking FDR died. That's not how
I was, you know, but, well, so they sent out light signals to the USS Iowa, trying to warn them that there was a
fucking bulb.
Yeah, the, you know, the little flashy lights. They sent that over there, like, ah, oh, this will work. But the guy that was manning the light was didn't know like how to correctly send out light signals, and so he just sent them. The Willie D. Porter is backing up, and they were like, "What?" What he was supposed to send was. We launched a torpedo at you, back up. But instead, he said, we are backing up. And they were like, what? And so finally, the captain was like, we're about to kill the President of the United States. So he broke radio silence and was like, evasive maneuvers, torpedo headed in your direction. And FDR, being the Chad that he is, looked at his Secret Service guy after finding out that there's a torpedo headed his way, and told the Secret Service dude, hey, roll me out to the side of the ship. I want to look at this torpedo. And so they have him on the side of the ship looking at this torpedo, and the USS Iowa is conducting, you know, evasive maneuvers, and the torpedo misses the ship about 1,000 feet.
Insane.
And so ever since then, you know, it had the boat had the thing like, hey, you just shot at the president. So any time, which I want you to know, FDR was a Democratic president. And so anytime anybody would come into contact with the Willie D or got even close, they were like, don't shoot, we're Republicans.
Oh, you couldn't live that down if you wanted to.
No, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Don't shoot, Republicans.
But, so...
I dig it.
They end up having the entire crew arrested, and whenever FDR found out about it, he thought it was hilarious. So he had them, you know, pardoned. He was like, no, it was pretty funny. So they went to, they got sent to the Pacific. And I guess it only gets worse from here. After doing some stuff in the Pacific, yada, 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 they ended up in the Battle of Okinawa, which the Battle of Okinawa was one of the two bloodiest battles ever fought in the Pacific theater. It was horrible. And I have a little partial bit to the Battle of Okinawa because my grandpa served on a destroyer during this time, and he was his ship was attacked by kamikazes. But that's a whole nother story for a different one. I'll tell that one later. But the
dude, I'd shit myself if like I didn't know that was a thing, and then just like the plane just didn't bank up after.
Yeah, no,
or whatever.
But related to my grandpa, the Willie D also. Had a kamikaze attack, but unfortunately the ship was destroyed from it. It suffered multiple fires, and numerous fires broke out. For 3 hours, her crew struggled to put out the fires and repair the damage to keep the ship afloat, but they were in vain. 12 minutes after the order to abandon the ship flipped over and sank. But was really lucky as the entire crew was saved.
God.
Yeah. It was just kind of crazy that, you know, you went from shooting a torpedo at the president to kamikaze attacks. I guess I could give, like, a very brief thing on my grandpa. He served on the USS Zellers, which was a destroyer too, like this. And sometime I'll bring up a picture of it when I tell the full story, because I had to tell the full story on this man, because this man... my grandpa was built different when it came to fucking, you know, the on his ship. But they had three kamikaze aircraft dive down at his ship. At the age of 16, he was a gunnery sergeant of an anti-aircraft gun. They shot down the first two. They hit the third one. The third one being a Zero. Zero dived down, hit the ship. And he was on the upper portion of the ship, up higher where they have the anti-aircraft gun. Whenever the plane hit, it knocked him up from the top rail
down onto the deck of the ship. And ever since then, he walked with a limp because it fucked up one of his two legs. And yeah, he survived. They were able to float the ship back to a port where they repaired the ship. But yeah, hull number 777. If that means anything to y'all? Which is also the mark of the angel.
But, shit!
Yeah, kind of neat little story about shooting a fucking torpedo at the goddamn U.S. president, and you know him thinking him so cool. He was like, "Hey, let me watch that shit.
Let me see.
Yeah,
hold my beer."
Oh,
I was getting kind of bored not getting shot at. Let's go. You know, enjoy the opportunity.
Oh, okay. So it wasn't that they unload the torpedo tubes. They had just taken the primers out that fires the torpedoes out, and they just forgot to take the third one out.
That's incredible. What a fucking lazy way to go about it. Like, I suppose it's probably better, you know, since you're also, like, where you can be shot at by, like, actual bad guys, so you'd kind of want to be ready.
Yeah.
But I would also like to mention, like, that's a terrible time to do that test.
Yeah, no, we're in the middle of that is the height of World War II right there at that point.
No, I'm all about doing maneuvers, even in wartime. I'm just talking about why are we, like, pretending to shoot where the president is? Like, that's just, like, a risk too big.
Yeah, they had a bunch of other ships.
Shoot literally any other ship. Like, not that one.
Yeah, just not that one. I guess they picked the biggest target. They were like, fuck it, let's try it on this battleship. So
easy money.
But, that's the story of the William D. Porter, or the Willie D., or the
it was nice to hear about your granddad. That's really cool as well.
Oh yeah, I got some more on there. There's actually a couple funny stories. Well, funny stories. They blew up ships, but I'll tell that. I'll tell that one later. But yeah. So, has anybody got anything else out? I think we're approaching the 60-minute mark.
Yeah, not that I can think of.
I think yeah. So I mean. All right, guys, so y'all have heard it from the Mary Celeste, the Franklin exploration, anywhere from people going missing to eating people alive to a crying painting surviving multiple fires to firing torpedoes at the U.S. president. Get ready for the next one. We have no idea what we're going to talk about in the next one, but it's going to be lit, and we'll see y'all guys later.
Bye.
Bye.